fluid would, you know, be used as the exhaust. And the United States did it once. We did it with one particular satellite. But in the future, they plan on doing it again. You know, they plan on actually going to Mars with this, that type of technology, where you would have fission material heating up liquid hydrogen. Liquid hydrogen would get so hot, they would use that as an exhaust. And that's pretty much the history of it. You know, it started back in the 60s. They knocked it down. And then Russia did it a little bit. We had one satellite that went up like that, probably in the late 60s. And then nothing until now. But, you know, it's an idea that it's an old idea that's being revisited again for future missions to Mars. If you had it on a Mars mission, you could cut back instead of 6 months to Mars. Maybe you could make it to 3 months. Anyway, back to you, Wes.
Yeah, that's interesting what you're saying about the heating the fuel. Very interesting. But I was talking about something else. I sent you the email. Maybe you didn't have the time to look at it. Dragonfly rotorcraft will ride a Falcon Heavy into space in July of 2028, kicking off a 6 year journey to Titan. SpaceX powerful Falcon Heavy rocket will launch yet another high-profile NASA space mission. The agency announced on November 25th that it has picked the Falcon Heavy to loft Dragonfly, a $3.35 billion mission that will investigate the life-hosting potential of Saturn, a huge moon Titan. So I thought you may comment on it. Back to you.
Oh, Dragonfly, yeah, we talked about that on the net before. We plan on having, this thing is going to be probably over 1,000 pounds flying thing around at 8 feet by about 7. And on the corners, you're going to have rotors. And the rotors are going to have, you know, you're going to have each section is going to have two rotors, one spinning clockwise, the other one counterclockwise. So basically like a drone, you're going to have, you know, a series of these blades, and each blade is going to be pretty long. I think each blade was almost 4 feet long, and that's in development now. That's called the Dragonfly, and it will be, when I say nuclear powered, that's not going to be a fission device. It's going to be RTG, radioisotope thermoelectric generators, that are going to produce the electric power to charge a lithium ion battery. These big, like, I think they're going to use a couple of 40-amp-hour batteries, lithium ion, in that machine. So yeah, they're going to launch it on a SpaceX rocket now. That's the last I heard, on a Heavy. That's like three Falcon 9s bolted together. Off to Saturn it goes, and then without going into orbit, it'll go directly to Titan. And it'll be really, you know, go through a process, heat shield, parachute, and before it actually lands, this unit would separate from that contraption that it just left behind, and now it's flying on its own. It never lands. The blades will spin up, and then it'll use its own power to land. That's a planned mission. Hope they don't cancel it. I worry about that one being canceled. Back to you, Wes.
Okay, that's it for tonight. Thank you very much, Paul. Thank you very much, Dr. Roy. Back to you, Andrew Schiff.
Okay, very good, Wesley. Thank you, as always, for your participation in the technical net. John, KD2BD, who listens to us and responds through the chat room, helped me with my memory problem. I was alluding to the comedic actor Rowan Atkinson. He played Mr. Bean for a bunch of times, I think even a couple of movies, and I think he made most of his money from Mr. Bean. I preferred him in his other television acts, but, you know, he made a lot of money and he spent it on cars. Anyway, once again, this is AC2GS, and we're coming to the end of this particular segment of the Technical Net. We have a few more minutes left. If anyone has any questions or comments or, you know, wants to discuss anything that we were talking about earlier tonight, it's a good old free-for-all for about 7 minutes. So if you have anything, hit that push to talk. Yes, what can I do for you?
Well, maybe we can look at this as a little bit of a segue between what was just being discussed and then finally the space section. And I was just curious, so the drones that are, you know, on the East Coast, I don't really want to get into any of the mysteries of that, but is there any chance that some of them that are staying aloft for a long time could be RTG powered, like a polonium 210 or something?
I guess it's possible. I think it's highly unlikely. If it ever got out, and you know, if you're going to fly it over civilians, you know, eventually something might go wrong and something might drop, and then you're in a lot of trouble. So if I was a betting man, I would bet against it, but I've been known to lose bets.
All right. Well, I was just curious because if they're staying aloft for a long time, and I'm not sure what kind of quantities would be needed, but I think the power to weight density on polonium 210 is pretty small. So if they had a little box in there well shielded that could survive a crash, just a thought.
Yeah, I understand. I don't know. I mean, it would be curious to know if you could efficiently power drones with that type of technology, and, you know, what would be the inherent risks? You know, what happens if it crash lands, if some idiot hits it with a shotgun or something? Because I know people, you know, from Staten Island who threaten to shoot their neighbor's drones with shotguns.
Never know. I just wanted to throw it out there, just as a, you know, could it possibly be, you know, a new technology that's being tested and all that. And I suppose if you had it well protected, it could drop on the ground, you know, from a shot, and it may not even break open. I mean, I have no idea. But it would explain perpetual aloftness, you know, as far as what some people were reporting. But anyway, just wanted to throw it out there. Appreciate your taking it as a potential thing to talk about.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, as long as we don't talk about Martians or little green men, I'm open to discussing any reasonable thing. I would imagine that if you shielded it extremely conservatively, it would increase the weight and diminish the value for it as a power source. But, you know, I tend to think we're never going to find out exactly what went on, because I'm not quite sure how much of it actually went on and how much of it is guys kind of, thinking things up in their head. You know, very much like the Havana syndrome, which no one has kind of come out and said it is definitively this, that, and the other thing. So we'll see. And if something else comes up in the news, I'm more than happy to discuss it here. I thank you for your participation. Anyone else with any questions, comments, or topics? Otherwise, we'll just kind of zip this up for tonight. Very well. well. This is formally the end of this segment of the pre-New Year Limewire Technical Net, and Paul, WS2N, let's have the SpaceNet report now.
Oh, okay. Oh, by the way, the acronym I was trying to think of was NERVA, NERVA. That's it for nuclear energy for rocket vehicle applications back in the 60s. But if you look that up, if Wes looks that up, he'll be fascinated by that topic. There was a question early on about the air leak in on the space station. I wonder if you wanted to pick that up, Roy.
Yeah, that was KE2ZFA. Are you out there?
Yeah, this is KE2ZFA. I wanted to get an update on, I think it was last month they had some sort of a problem on the ISS, but I think it's like someone was leaking, or maybe one of the astronauts wasn't feeling good. But, after that, I didn't hear any updates, like, if they made a mission and brought a rocket up there, or how it worked out.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, you have the two ongoing problems. One, of course, is a crew of two that went up on the Starliner. That's Sunny Williams. She's a ham radio operator, by the way. While she's up there, she's making contacts with schools down below on the amateur radio on the International Space Station program. The other crew member was Butch Wilmore, and they went up June 5th. It was supposed to go up for a week or so. They were guessing about 2 weeks. You know, they figured they'll test out the spacecraft, the brand new spacecraft that Boeing built, and it was launched on now. It was 5 rockets docked successfully with the space station, but they knew they had some pressure problems. So they investigated them. They felt they weren't comfortable in bringing the crew back with that spacecraft. So the spacecraft came back by itself, landed in New Mexico, where it's supposed to. Lands on the ground. It's got these big airbags that pop out. If the crew was on there, they would have made it. But the crew stayed on. The plan is to let them come back with another crew. They had a planned mission of 4 that was going to go up anyway within a couple. So they decided, well, we're just going to send up 2, and then that'll leave 2 seats open for these 2 people to come back. Problem is the planned mission is for, 5 to 6 months. So they said, okay, well, we'll just leave those 2 up there for 5 to 6 months, and they'll come back with the new crew that was just sent up a year from now. So that they were going to come back in February. And now SpaceX was supposed to send up another vehicle, building a new manned spacecraft. They need an additional one. And that one isn't ready yet, and that was supposed to go up in February. The deal is this crew of 4 is supposed to come back, but the rules that NASA uses is if a crew is coming back, they have to send another crew up first, and then that crew can then come back. Because that new spacecraft isn't ready, they're going to have to wait until March to bring Sonny Williams and Butch Wilmore back, and they're going to come back with the planned the other 2 fellows that went up there, Russian and an American. So there's no problem. These people are used to this. Your average mission to, when they go up is for everybody, it's usually around 6 months anyway. Let me drop it. Okay, you know, that's one problem. The other problem is the air leak. That's what I heard you talk about earlier on in the Russian segment. The Russian segment has, you know, you have the, from the rear of the spacecraft forward, you have the Zvezda, and that Zvezda module is attached to the functioning cargo back, block. That's another module. That attached to an adapter called a pressure mating adapter, and then pressure mating adapter number one is connected to the American segment that connects to Unity, and that one connects to Destiny, and you keep going forward, and that goes to eventually Harmony, and you have this whole string of modules, and some that go out on the port section, and some that go out on the starboard section. You got 15 of them, you know, where you could actually live and breathe and work. Let me drop it. On the Russian side, the Zvezda module, you have different ports. They have four different ports, different locations where spacecraft could dock with them. You know, you can come up with a cargo vehicle, you can come up with a crew vehicle, and they have four different ports on their end of the space station. The United States, along with the European Space Agency, we have four on our side as well. We can either dock cargo vehicles or crew vehicles there. The Russian side, one of the ports that they dock on is the first main big module that the Russians had put up there, which was the Zvezda module, and that thing is. Has one of the ports, you know, for vehicles that dock with it. Anytime a vehicle docks with any of these ports on the space station, there's what's called a vestibule in between, a small area. So, you know, in other words, you have two latches before you come into a space station. You have to, you know, the inside of the latch has to be open. Let me drop it. By the way, this is WIT. So, one hatch is going to be open on the inside, and then eventually another hatch opens up on the crew side. And you go through, and you force the vestibule and into the space station, and everything's fine. And they generally leave like that. They'll leave the doors open, and, you know, for the months or sometimes 6 months or so, whatever it is that they're going to stay there before they leave. Well, one of those in the vestibule where the spacecraft is docked, and they could either have a crew vehicle on the Russian side or a Progress cargo vehicle. Right now, it's a Progress cargo vehicle. So they know that in the vestibule there is a leak going on, and they're losing anywhere between 2 and 5 pounds of air pressure per day, which is not all that much. You know, I mean, I think a human, you know, through a day, I forget how many pounds a human inhales, but it's not 2 pounds, and so it's a lot less air than one human would inhale for the day. It's a relatively small leak. And the only reason it's leaking is because they have, I guess it's going back 6 months or so, when they first discovered this. And they tried different ways of sealing it off, trying to find a leak. They really can't do it. The Russians are having a problem doing that. So what they chose to do is they closed the door, the hatch, on the inside, you know, inside of the space station. Now all the air stays inside the space station. All these 15 modules, you're not going to bleed any air out of it, because now that door is sealed, And what happens is that you wind up with a vacuum in that vestibule area. So when it is time to open those doors and have the cargo vehicle leave, what they do is they'll go through this process of, they will pressurize that area. You know, it's only temporary. They'll open up the doors. Load the level to whatever stuff is going to be they want to destroy, because when the progress vehicle leaves, you know, that doesn't come back to Earth, that gets burnt up over the South Pacific. So, you know, load it all up, close the hatch again, and that's it, no more leak until next time. And the problem is, you would say, well, okay, well, let's not use that port and choose the other three ports and forget about that port. That particular port they need, that's the one that they also bring up fuel in those cargo vehicles. And they load the fuel into that final module that Russians have. That's the module. And anytime they need to move their space station for any reason, maybe it might be coming by, or another, you know, space junk might be coming by, and they might need to move the station. They need that fuel in there to ignite, to move the space station. So that's the problem. They need to utilize that particular station, but, you know, temporarily anyway. They keep it closed. They'll have it docked, open it up, unload the cargo, close the door, and they're good to go for another couple of months. Anyway, I hope that answers your question. Long answer, but back to you. Now I forgot your name. This is Paul.
All right, my name is Kenny. It makes sense now. I understand.
Okay, very good. And if you ever want to see the construction of the International Space Station, I did a presentation for Limark years ago. If you go to Limark.com, Limark.org, you go to the YouTube section. Now they have countless YouTubes that guys have done. And one of the presentations, you'll look for the picture of the International Space Station. That was the one I did. And I described the workings of the space station from one end to the other, all the different truss sections and the solar panels and all of that. So you might get a kick out of that. But you need a lot of time. We can go fast forward if you get bored with it. The whole thing is about 1 hour and 15 minutes long. Anyway, any other comments? WS1.
This is Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Juliet Uniform. Good evening, Paul.
KE2HAU. Hi. Hi.
Now, this air leak that they have on the space station, had it for a long time. And I'm surprised that they can't fix it somehow.
Yeah, they know it's there, you know, because, you know, when they close the inside hatch and they check the pressure does not go down anymore. Open the hatch, pressure's going down, and they know it's not in the spacecraft, because they've had numerous spacecrafts come up there over the last, you know, couple of years, and they know it's in the vestibule area. And for some reason, Russians, anytime they investigate that, they can't find it. They have sealed off areas that they thought were leaking, but to no avail. But, you know, I think the Russians have issues, you know, with this whole space program. They're financially strapped, and I don't know. I'll be glad when we have our own free-flying space stations in the future. You know, you don't want to be tied to a country like that that's having problems financially to keep them going. They're responsible for, fuel, powering up the space station and keeping their end of it. Although we do now have a plan B, we can't get around that. For instance, say the Russians, we can't do it anymore. We have found a way to do it. The idea is to keep the space station alive until about 2031. So, I thought they were going to be able to find it. They can't even determine exactly where it is. I agree with you on that. Okay, anyway. Want to mention the New Glenn spacecraft, the New Glenn rocket that Blue Origin is building. I've talked about this probably 100 times on the net, but looking forward to eventually seeing the first one launched. This whole rocket is going to be competitive against SpaceX. It's a heavy lift vehicle called the New Glenn. And it has large engines for the first stage. Each first stage is around 560,000 pounds of thrust. There's going to be seven of them. And they have a second stage with two engines, different engines. So they're called BE-3 engines. They're going to be liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen. On the second stage, and very powerful, almost 400 pounds of thrust between the two of them. I think it's around 360. The first stage is going to be close to 4 million pounds of thrust. I think it's 3,800,000 pounds of thrust for now. And for the first stage. It's going to be very competitive, even against SpaceX. They have the Falcon Heavy. That's three Falcon Heavies bolted together. When you put three of them together, you get around 5 million pounds of thrust. So you would say, well, that one's better than the New Glenn, but it's far from it. Because the diameter of all those three core stages that are bolted together on Falcon 9 SpaceX are around 12 feet in diameter. And I think it's around 100 feet tall for the first stage on those. Where the New Glenn, their stage is 190 feet tall, but their diameter is much larger. It's almost twice the size. It's 23 feet in diameter compared to their 12 feet. So if you do the math, with volume for a cylinder, and you double the diameter, you're going to wind up, I think it's a little over three times the volume because it's also smaller, 190 feet instead of 5 feet. This is all for the first stages. So New Glenn will be able to put heavier loads into orbit once it gets running. It's going to be a reusable vehicle. They plan on landing this on a drone ship. Their drone ship is even bigger than SpaceX drone ship. The boost is larger. In fact, the whole rocket, with the first stage and second stage, is roughly 320 feet long. So if you lay the whole rocket down on a football field, we pretty much all see what football fields look like. Imagine laying one down from one end to the other and it would go past the Earth. It would go past the O-line. 23 feet in diameter. So I really do want to see this thing successfully launch. The reason I'm bringing it up, Friday, they did a test for their 7 engines. You know, they know these engines are reliable because they're also making the exact same engines. They have 7 here. They're making the exact same engines for the Vulcan rocket that Boeing and Lockheed have been using for the Vulcan rocket. The Vulcan rocket, so far successfully, has launched twice. And on their first stage, they have these brand new engines at Blue Origin building. They're called BE-4 engines. And that means they're... instead of 2, they're going to use 7. And what the fuel that they use is liquid natural gas, LNG, compared to SpaceX's methane. And they also believe they can get a lot more thrust, better ISP, better gas mileage out of LNG compared to methane. Even though it's almost the same thing. It's going to be better for them for reusability, from what I've read. Launch now, because they tested these 7 rocket engines on the pad. They built a whole new pad down in Florida, Launch Complex 36. And, they spent over $1 billion on, making the design for this rocket. So they got it out to the pad. They've had similar test pieces out to the pad, and make sure everything fits, fit test. But this is the first time the actual rocket, complete with the 7 engines and the 2 engines for the second stage, have been on the launch complex. They decided to see if we could duplicate it. So they go through a countdown, like they're going to launch. It's more than just a wet dress rehearsal. Wet dress rehearsal is, filling all the tanks and then checking everything out and then eventually unloading the tanks. In this case, they filled all the tanks, first stage, second stage, like they were going to launch. And then they ignited the engines for 24 seconds. And, it wasn't going anywhere because they have it all locked down. You can't leave the launch pad. But they went up to full thrust for, I think they said, around 12 seconds out of the 23 seconds. And, they went up to 100%, and then it shuts down. And everything is, they checked everything out. Everything's fine. They will now be able to launch. And the launch date is going to be 4 o'clock in the morning, which I'm not too happy about, but it's going to be 4 o'clock in the morning on January 6th. If I don't see it live, of course I'll see a recording of it. And hopefully it works where it takes off. Second stage will eventually light up as well. It's going to, the whole thing's going to get into orbit, and they don't have an actual satellite that's going to release. They have this test piece of equipment on board with it, they just run some tests. Maiden flight of New Glenn. The next flight that goes up will actually have satellites going up. In fact, they'll be going to Mars, and that'll be done in the springtime. This successful flight, they'll set things up for next spring. The first stage, after about 8 to 9 minutes, will come back down to the Atlantic Ocean and land on this big drone ship that I was talking about before. And Jeff Bezos named it after his mother, Jacqueline, drone ship. So we'll see. Any comments about New Glenn or anything else we've discussed so far? This is WS2N.
They're going to reuse the engines?
Yes, they are. They call them B4 engines. You know, B is for Blue Origin. Blue Origin engine, B4 they call it. And they're going to be 100% reusable over and over and over again. The only ones that aren't reusable for now, anyway, they will be in the future, is for the ones that they're... they've made for the Vulcan rocket, which is launched 2 times, like I mentioned before. But now they're scrapping those engines, you know, it's just going into the drink after launch. But New Glenn is designed to have the exact same engine, B4s, be reusable. And the second stage, they're called BE3 engines. That's a different fuel, like I said. That they're liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. But now, that is not reusable. But he's got dreams of that being reusable in the future as well. Okay, back to you, George.
Now, I'm looking at the rocket, and it's 20, you say it's 21 feet in diameter from the base. The way I see it, it's standing up like a six-story building. Is this possible when it's landed on the moon?
Okay, yeah, it's 23 feet in diameter, 190 feet, actually 189 feet, I'm about to boost it now, 189 feet tall. Now you put the second stage on it, now the whole thing is... same thing. It's 23 feet in diameter all the way up. Now the whole thing is 300 feet, or actually 320 feet tall. So you're looking at roughly a 30-story building that will lift off the launch pad. That 190-foot section will come back and land on the drone ship. And then the other piece... 100 feet, whatever it is, the second stage will go into orbit. So, yeah, and for now, it's not going to the moon, of course, but they're just going to go into orbit. The next test or next flight would be in springtime, and they plan on sending 2 satellites, you know, on the same rocket, two satellites to Mars. And then they have a lot of flights planned in the future after that. They're going to be setting up communication satellites, all kinds of stuff. One of the things that they have planned toward the end of the year, but I hope they make it by the end of the year, but there is a plan on sending a spacecraft, using this rocket to the moon. So, yeah. But it won't be, of course, the rocket itself. The rocket... you know, first stage gets reused, the second stage, eventually deorbits, into the Earth's atmosphere. But, the spacecraft that they release will eventually go to the moon. It's going to be a cargo version called the Blue Moon. That's the name of it, yeah. Blue Moon. That will be landing on the moon. That's a very large rocket. And that has another engine that they're developing. It's called the BE-7 engine. So we'll talk about that in the future when they get that far. Then eventually those same BE-7 engines will be part of a man landing. The one I just mentioned would be for cargo on the moon. Eventually they're going to have to eventually carry a crew down to the surface of the moon, and that rocket will go between the surface of the moon and the Gateway space station, which will be revolving around the moon itself. So that'll be going back and forth. And that will be reusable. That will never come back to Earth. That will just go from space station to moon and back and forth over the years. Anyway, that's their plans. Charlie, back to you.
You mean they're going to have a space shuttle?
Well, you want to call it a shuttle, but I think of a shuttle with, you know, like with the 135 that we launched from Earth. But yeah, it's going to shuttle. It's going to shuttle our crew from the space station, you know, from the Gateway space station. Of course, that's not there yet, but they're building hardware for that right now. And the moon. Yeah, they plan on doing that. And the way you get the crew to the space station is through the Orion spacecraft that's being built by NASA. You know, they have the SLS, the Space Launch System. So the Space Launch System would launch a crew on Orion. Orion would dock with the space station gateway that's going around the moon. And then from there, you'd have this Blue Moon setup that Jeff Bezos has, crew back and forth. They have two vehicles that plan on doing that. It's called the Human Landing System, and that's, you know, Blue Moon is one of them. The other one is by SpaceX. They plan on having a Starship do that, go back and forth to the moon. So big plans. You know, I'm not going to hold my breath. I mean, you know, I expect delays, but, you know, right now all these things are on the books. Back to you, Charlie.
Orion spacecraft is not new.
No, yeah, that's not new, but I mean, the design has been out there for 10, 12 years, Orion spacecraft. But, you know, of course, it's never been manned yet. They have tested it in the end of 2022. That was the one that they launched on the first SLS rocket from Florida, and that was successful. It orbited the moon, went around the moon, came back, landed in the Pacific Ocean. It took 25 days to do that. Back to you, Sean.
Yes, I'm looking at a picture now. It doesn't look very big.
Yeah, tight quarters. I think it's tight quarters for four people. I concur.
Manufacturer Martin.
That is true. Lockheed Martin. And the ones that built the SLS is a combination of Lockheed and Boeing. You know, everybody's got a piece of that. In fact, the solid booster rockets, the ones on the starboard side and port side, are built by Northrop Grumman. Northrop Grumman bought up another company that used to make these things. So, you know, they started from Orbital Science and got bought up, and eventually, make a long story short, it wound up in with Northrop Grumman, and they're building the big solid booster rockets, similar to the solid booster rockets that used to launch the space shuttle system. The only difference, of course, the main difference is longer. The boosters are actually longer. Instead of four segments, they have five segments. But, yeah, a lot going on. I just wonder what's going to happen with the new administration. You know, are they going to keep all the stuff? Are they going to fill around and foul things up? I don't know. Back to you, Charles.
I think with this administration, he's going to throw the rule book out the window. If you could find a window, and they're just going to be shooting rockets till they're blue in the face.
I know that's exactly what they want to do, but whether they do it or not, I don't know. There's going to be, you know, a lot of pushback. You know, that gets into the political end of things, but there's going to be a lot of pushback if they try to change things. You know, what happens is, like, you take the SLS program. You got Boeing involved, Lockheed involved, you get Northrop Grumman involved. NASA's, I think it's 47 states are indirectly connected to the SLS mission, the Space Launch System. You know, to delay anything or cancel anything, you know, which would be worse, you'd be affecting jobs, you know, all throughout the country. So, you know, that's one of the advantages of NASA. You know, they're not held down to like one particular company or one particular state. Where that's what happens with the private industry. You know? So we'll see. We'll see, Charlie. We'll just keep my fingers crossed.
I'm looking up right now. I'm trying to see how many launches there were already this year.
Yeah, I saw it the other day. I think it was 230 or something. And next year is going to be 250. I'm talking about worldwide launches, you know, between us and China and all. I think there was around 230. And SpaceX has been launching like once every 3 days on average, you know, another Falcon 9. And then now they have this other thing, Starship, under development. You have a bunch of new companies coming out. Some of them, I can't even pronounce their names. It's the one right after the other. There's a lot of new companies that are developing these rockets. New launch complexes around the world are being built in Norway and Finland. It's unbelievable. Another launch complex is being built. They're going to have an orbital launch from Australia. So as these things come up, you know, we'll talk about them on the net. I'm sure it'll be all over the internet. Back to you, Sean.
No.
Here's a subject we talked about a while back, a couple of weeks ago, I think. Orbital debris, you know, and too many satellites in space. Called the Kessler syndrome. Kessler syndrome is, you know, it really says that, you know, with so many satellites in orbit, you know, you could eventually have a couple crash into one another and start spreading the debris out, and then the debris could hit other satellites. I mean, you know, it could be catastrophic. You know, so. They're getting to that point. You have over 7,000 internet satellites that SpaceX has launched, you know, Starlink. You have, I think, 600 satellites that OneWeb, another company, has launched already, again, for internet satellites. You have China, they're talking about 13,000 that they would love to launch. SpaceX isn't done. They launched 7,000. They want to launch, you know, another, I think, 28,000 or some satellites. You know, there's no end in sight. So, you know, and of course, regular satellites that are still up there, you know, a couple thousand of them. You know, before you know it, you're going to have 100,000 active satellites in space, not to mention the debris. There is a program that a lot of countries have already signed on to where they're promising to, whatever they send up, make sure that there's plans on deorbiting things, you know. Don't send a second stage or a third stage up there and just let it go around the Earth and, you know, for the next couple hundred years, letting it, you know, slowly decline. But, you know, they want to make sure that, you know, whatever they send up, there's, you know, little thrusters on board. SpaceX has them. They have little ion thrusters on every one of those satellites. So if there's something wrong with it, they could, you know, send the signal and it would a little ion thrust that would come on, and you know, inside of a couple of weeks it would deorbit. But we'll see. You know, it's called the Kessler syndrome. This guy, he thought this up in the late 1970s, and he said, you know, we're getting to the point where, you know, someday in the future we're going to have a possible catastrophic event. There was a good movie called Gravity. I remember seeing that years ago. You know, Sandra Bullock was in it. And, you know, it did happen. A couple of satellites, I think, hit one another, and it just spread, and, you know. I mean, they went overboard with that movie, you know. You know, the pieces would start flying up to different altitudes, which really wouldn't happen. Usually the pieces stay in one direction, you know, or, you know, whatever orbital plane they're in. But, you know, it's still pretty bad if that does happen. We've had a couple of collisions over the years. And, it was an Iridium satellite that was hit by a non-operating Russian satellite. That caused a lot of problem, a lot of angst. Politicians had to get involved with that. And that led to, that's one of the problems. The good news is it led to certain agreements with different countries, especially China. They couldn't care less about what they leave in space, but now they're starting to get a little bit better. The idea is whatever you send up there, you know, if you're not using it, make sure it has the capability of not only getting out of the way of other satellites if there's a problem, but, you know, if it becomes, you know, non-functional, you know, we want that to deorbit. Any comments?
Is there any way to prevent this space debris from bumping into each other? Like, you know, kind of like after like 10 years or 12 years, maybe a satellite would just dissolve. I know it sounds stupid, but it'll save a lot in the long run.
Yeah. For all future satellites. And, all those 7,000 Starlink satellites are supposed to be designed where, you know, at the end of their lifetime, well, if they start malfunctioning, they have the capability of deorbiting. And from what I understand, they have software on board to tell it, you know, if another satellite is coming nearby, it can supposedly get out of the way. But we'll see. Let me just stand by a minute and see if I wanted to see if Frank is out there. I'm not leaving enough time on Echo Link. This is WS2N for ID.
WB2BXO.
Good evening, Frank. WB2BXO. And I wanted to give you a chance to get in there. I know you usually listen, and if you don't have anything, I just want to say Happy New Year. Anyway, over to you, Frank.
Yes, I do want to say Happy New Year, of course, and Happy Hanukkah to all of those who are celebrating that, too. Yeah, I wanted to say this issue of deorbit requirements has become an issue, if I remember correctly, with amateur radio satellites also, which I understand it is particularly difficult since, you know, those are particularly low budget, and yet they somehow have to design, the very SAMSAT group somehow have to design a deorbit strategy into these, okay?
Yeah, I know that there's a bunch of Dove satellites up there, you know, Oscar satellites. I don't know if they ever came back. But yeah, they're free flying. Some of them are that they put up. They put at low orbit, where you know they don't stay up there that long. You know, some of these ones with that are there. They use as beacons, and you know, they might last, you know, months, and eventually they orbit by themselves. And there's a couple of them now. I think there's one that they wanted to attach to a large geosynchronous satellite. They were going to do that. I don't know if they ever did that. There was a Phase 3 program, remember, in the 80s, I think the late 80s. And I think that they ran out of money on that thing. Something happened. Maybe that was one of the missions that failed, and they didn't want to do it again. Some kind of history, but that was supposed to be a geosynchronous amateur satellite. But yeah, I believe they have plans for that type of thing. So if they go up and they're attached to a big spacecraft, you know, naturally it's up to the owner of the biggest spacecraft to design it where it could either go to the graveyard, I mean, you know, further out past the geosynchronous orbit, or actually that's the only way they can do it. There's no capability of bringing any of those back right now. It would be much too expensive. Anyway, back to you, Frank.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, I think there is a plan for a Phase 3 or Phase 4 geosynchronous transponder. They're trying to figure out who has the budget to do that. The Emiratis, I think, put up a UO-100, a geosynch transponder, on somebody else's satellite. And that works out very well, but it doesn't cover North America. So it covers a very small part of South America, eastern Brazil, the Western Hemisphere, but that's it. And, it's a competitive and want to be able to do this for the Western Hemisphere. So there are some proposals to do that, I understand. F.Oscar-7 is still actually operating, at least sporadically. It's been up for something like 50 years now. And that was long before there were these de-orbit requirements. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. And, I'm trying to think. There was one Oscar satellite that thought was dead, and that just came back to life a couple months ago. I should follow them more, but I'm not. What number are they up to? Did they get up to like 80 or something? Oscar 80? I can find that real quick on the internet. But yeah, there's been countless
that time
satellites
complete.
That have gone up. You know, it's great. I did it years ago. Transmitted, what the heck was it? I had to transmit on 15 meters and it came back on 10 meters. Some weird Oscar satellite I work. But that's as far as I ever got. Do you work on any of these? Have you done any of the satellite work, Frank?
Yeah, in fact, I have a board of QSL cards and some of the FM satellites. The satellite that you're thinking of that just sort of started working again was Oscar 7. That was put up many years ago. It's been up for over 50 years. It was declared dead a long time ago when the battery shorted to the radio, and it started working again. So that's the one you're thinking of. Satellite, I think you're thinking of, that you operated.